Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, is here for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We have been bringing you on ground radio shows since 1987 and podcasts since they initiated, as well as being one of the first shows featured here on Gary Null's network, Progressive Radio Network, which you can always find at prn.live. We'd also like to tell you to visit our website at naturalnurse.com. You know, from there, of course, you can get to our Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that. Instagram, people really seem to love that. We have over 20,000 visitors there regularly. But I really like still the website because that's where we give a full description of all of our classes, and it stays there, unlike Instagram, where it's instant and it's there and then it's gone. But of course, you're welcome to visit us at any of those locations. At our website at naturalnurse.com, if you go to events, you'll see some of the up and coming events. We have a class coming up called Feeling the Consciousness of Plants, and that class offers 3 credits to people who have a medical license that they need to get credits for, such as nurses and massage therapists and acupuncturists and nutritionists. But if you don't have that and you just want to take it to learn more about the consciousness of plants, which is both traditional knowledge and modern scientific knowledge that discusses how plants and humans physically communicate with receptor sites on our cells that are specifically designed for interspecies communication, really fascinating. And that class is coming up in June. We also have a wild, edible, and medicinal herb identification workshop coming up where we go out in the field looking for plants and other edibles, fruits, leaves, roots, etc., and gathering them and making them into medicine. We have a class coming up also at the Restoration Farm in Old Bethpage where we go as a group, and this always closes out really quickly, and gather these wild plants, and then everyone makes their own medicine. And of course, we teach you how. We also have a walk coming up in Chinatown in New York City, which is like going to another country. And many people have registered for that one already as well. That's in June. June's just around the corner at this point. And we go to Chinatown. We investigate the traditional herbal remedies. And we do Qigong in the park and just have a really fascinating day as if you went to another country. That's what it feels like there. So you can find all of these classes and more at naturalnurse.com. And also, if you're really interested in a whole variety of things that you can learn, classes that you can take about specific aspects, how about what would you use for a respiratory issue? What herbs and what protocol? How about if you want to maintain excellent heart wellness, what herbs and supplements would you use? Well, for that, you could go to Natural Nurse Academy. And on Natural Nurse Academy, we have a long list of classes, along with the handouts, PDFs, book references, and a full lecture, which is taped. I don't know if they use tape, whatever they do online. It's a kind of lecture you can watch online, like a Zoom recording. And we go through every aspect, including the dosing, of about 30 to 50 different topics in holistic medicine. And those are very, very cost-effective classes. And that's at Natural Nurse Academy. We also have a lot of books that Dr. Zamperone and I have written. You can just go to naturalnurse.com products and look at books. And then, of course, we have links for you to get them just right from Amazon. That's the least expensive way to find them. But people often find them in other places, even at their local bookstores as well. We have books called Supplements for Pain, Keys to Virility and Vitality, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, Cycles of Life, which is really focused on herbs and energy techniques for the stages of a woman's life. and Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and the Natural Medicine Chest, and Weight Loss, the Definitive Guide. So a whole array of books are there, as well as our radio show archive, which you can visit under media. And then we also have suggestions for things like protection, such as electromagnetic field meters and shields. And we have lots of radio shows about that as well on our archive. So depending on what your interest is in terms of natural therapies, you can find an entire range of information, a lot of it totally free, right at naturalnurse.com. And today, we'd like to bring on our guest, Dr. Dominic Brandy. Dr. Brandy is a medical doctor who has been practicing medicine for over 40 years, and he is the founder of Natural Insights into Cancer, which focuses on the use of diet, exercise, targeted supplements, and other lifestyle changes to help fight cancer. Health and nutrition have been a passion of Dr. Brandy since he was a young boy, about 10 years old. And he also is the author of the book called Beat Back Cancer Naturally, which includes 5 scientifically proven natural and plant-based ways to prevent, survive, and thrive with cancer. So you can find Dr. Brandy in various locations. We'll let him tell you about that. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brandy.
Hey, it's great being here.
So what is the best way for people to find you? Is it naturalinsightsintocancer.com? Is that a good spot?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. I would say a lot of people find me through Instagram. I have an Instagram site called Cancer Veggie Doc. I have over 36,000 followers on there. Every day I do a post. And then my website is naturalinsightsintocancer.com. And the insights is INSIGHTS. And most of the posts that I do, I end up on Instagram. I end up posting them to my website. And then also on my website, you know, down at the bottom, it'll actually take you to Instagram. But on top of that, I do Facebook. I do I post to TikTok. So I'm on a lot of social media. And then
easy to find, right?
Yeah.
So just put in your name and we'll go to all those places.
Right. If you put either... For Facebook, it's Dominic Brandy, and then for Twitter, it's Dominic Brandy, and then also Cancer Veggie Doc. And then I have a YouTube channel, too. Same thing. It's Dr. Dominic Brandy, and then Cancer Veggie Doc is on there. So I post a lot of videos to YouTube, too.
Well, let's go back in time.
I made a note today. I got to start posting to Twitter.
Uh-oh. So let's go back
try to get
in time.
The information out.
Let's go back to starting. Let's go back to Dr. Dominic, the little boy. How did your life start out and how did you get on the path to become a physician in the first place?
Well, when I was young, you mentioned when I was about 10 years old, I got interested in health and nutrition. And the way I did that, my mother used to get Prevention magazine every month. I don't know if you remember that magazine, but
I certainly do.
And I think it's still out, but my mother would get that and I would be really interested in it. I would read that thing from cover to cover. I was only 10 years old. So it was something that I don't know why, it just really super intrigued me. And I would just keep up with that. In fact, when I got into medical school, I went to medical school in Philadelphia, Hahnemann, it's now Drexel. My mother would actually send me the Prevention magazines when she was done. So, you know, I've been reading that forever. And then obviously, as I've gotten older, I do a ton of research. I'm always, every morning, I'm on different scientific websites trying to find data about cancer, different herbal supplements, lifestyle changes that people can not only help their cancer risk, but also if they have cancer, stay in a remission. A lot of my patients that I counsel, I mean, they're stage 4 metastatic. I'm always looking for ways to help them either slow down or reverse some of that cancer progression. So now I'm on the internet a lot, getting a ton of information Not only on cancer, but also cardiovascular risk, because most people don't realize any studies show anywhere from 20 to 40% of cancer patients, they don't die of the cancer. They actually die of a cardiovascular event. So I always make sure my patients are, cardiovascularly fit. I like to check their lipid profiles and, make sure everything looks in order. They're exercising and eating the right diet and so forth.
So back when you were studying, even as a young person, and then you decided to go to medical school, did you see any conflict between what they were teaching you in medical school with what you were learning in something like Prevention magazine?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, at my school, I remember us only having about 2 weeks of nutritional education. And it was like 1 or 2 hours for probably 10 days each. So it was maybe, 20 hours or something like that. And it was honestly in the form of a junior high school health class. You don't eat vitamin C, you're going to get scurvy. If you don't eat enough protein, you'll get Kashiwari, disease, or you'll get rickets if you don't get vitamin D. And I mean, nowadays, you just don't see that because even Fruit Loops is fortified with vitamin C, probably. So it was really very, I was kind of upset by it. And because obviously our lifestyle and what we eat has a profound effect on how we will age and obviously what kind of chronic diseases we're going to get. And I read a recent study, only 25% of medical schools actually require any nutritional education, which is quite mind-blowing to me. It's all about pharmacology. I mean, we basically were taught somebody has X number of symptoms, you make a diagnosis, then you give them this pill. And that was pretty much the way that we were taught. And I never remember anybody ever telling us to have them change their diet or have them exercise more. I just never remembered that being part of the equation.
No, isn't that quite amazing?
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, because the science tells us that food and lifestyle is directly related to pretty much every kind of health challenge.
Absolutely.
And yet it's still not discussed in medical school, nor is it addressed by most physicians. Of course, it is by you. So people are lucky who find Dr. Dominic Brandy. But it's so unfortunate and actually criminal.
It really is. It is starting to change. I think a lot of the millennials are, eating more plant-based, not because of health. I think a lot of them are doing just for like climate change or animal rights or whatever. And that's fine. If you're going to eat more healthy because of that, that's fine. But I do think there is a wave. I think more schools are starting to introduce nutrition, which is good. There's an organization called the American Society of Lifestyle Medicine, where doctors get trained. You can actually get a board certification in that. And so that is growing. So I do think it's going to get better as time goes on.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so, because I was recently in an NIH panel, and it was an international discussion saying that we have the studies. There are no other studies needed. They can go on and on, certainly, but we have the evidence to show that lifestyle and diet is directly related to health and wellness, and yet it is not used as standard of practice in mainstream medicine.
Right. I don't know if your listeners know, but I was diagnosed with an incurable blood cancer 5.5 years ago called multiple myeloma. And what's really weird about this story is I actually started eating a whole food plant-based diet about 2 months before I got diagnosed. I read a book by Dr. Michael Greger. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's called How Not to Die. I was on this cruise and I've read well over 300 health and nutrition books in my career. Anytime I go on a vacation, that's the first thing I do. I pull up a health and nutrition book. And for those that have ever read the hardback, How Not to Die, it's literally about 2 inches thick. and about an inch of it are scientific references. And that was the thing that really intrigued me about this book. There weren't any anecdotes or anything like that, which I hate, or even case studies. And what the science was showing over and over again was that cultures and research cohort groups, and when you look at Mendelian randomization studies, those groups that ate more plant-based had a much lower incidence of cancer, cardiovascular disease, dementia, type 2 diabetes, really all-cause mortality. So on that cruise, I actually started eating whole food plant-based. My wife thought I was out of my mind, but and then we came back 2 months later. I was actually diagnosed with multiple myeloma. I had some pain in my right collarbone, and it was getting worse and worse. I didn't really know what was going on. Then one evening, we were watching TV. I lunged for a container of spilling water, and my bone just cracked in half. And I got a X-ray, MRI, and they came up with this diagnosis of a IgA myeloma. And for your listeners who don't know, that's a cancer of the B cells in your body. They're the cells that make your antibodies. So I was able to get into a complete remission in 6 months. And part of my story is when I went to my oncologist, because I had this IgA of two oral medications and then this other drug called Velcade. It's a proteasome inhibitor, where I would have to go into the hospital every week and get an injection into my abdomen. And the more I read about it, almost everybody that gets Velcade gets some kind of a bad peripheral neuropathy in their feet, their hands. And I, you know, being, I'm a plastic surgeon by trade. And being a surgeon, I just didn't want to risk having my fingers having any kind of tactile issues. So I refused the Velcade for two reasons. First off, I didn't want the peripheral neuropathy. But secondly, I had already been eating a whole food plant-based diet for 2 months. And I felt confident that I was going to be able to get this thing licked with all of the knowledge that I had so far. Obviously what I was going to continue to get as I was battling this cancer. So my oncologist was super upset. He didn't think there was any way I was going to get into a complete remission, but I said, hey, I'm not doing that Velcade. So every month I got better. In 6 months, I was in a complete remission. And in that whole time, I went into a deep dive into the scientific literature, you know, every herb I could take, every lifestyle change that I could make. And my doctor was absolutely flabbergasted. He, first off, he didn't even think I was going to get into remission. Then when I got into one in 6 months, he just couldn't believe it. And I've been that way ever since. I've kept all my numbers the same. In fact, right now I'm actually weaning the number of days that I take this medication called Revlimid. It's a 21 7-day rest, 21 days on, 7 days off. And right now I'm down to 18-10, and we're just going to keep going down. And, you know, maybe I'll be the first one to be cured of myeloma. I don't know. I'm hoping. So we'll see how that goes. But that's a really interesting part of my story, is that I just did not start eating whole food plant-based because I was diagnosed with cancer. It was because of this book that I read and all the science that was there, just demonstrating that people that ate more of a plant-based diet had much lower incidence of all kind of diseases. In fact,
what kind of diet were you eating before that particular?
Eating, you know, it was funny because in my practice, I had basically a plastic surgery / med spa / anti-aging center. And I did a lot of counseling in the anti-aging division on diet and hormone replacement. We used to do stem cell treatments. We did all kind of really cool things in there. But I will honestly tell you, I was probably confused as anybody else because you just get all of this information, especially nowadays with social media, carnivore diet, paleo diet, keto diet, vegan diet, vegetarian diet. And these groups are, I mean, they argue with each other with religious fervor, and people get totally confused. So in my situation, after I read Greger's book, it really helped clear the air for me. I was eating meat with every single meal. So when I would have lunch, I would have a salad. I would always put chicken in there. When I would come home for dinner, my wife would make something. She'd always have like seafood or chicken in there. every morning I always had, I did always have like all, I would have my nurses actually make me a little breakfast thing with yogurt. It was a Greek yogurt with like a bunch of berries in it. So that was, you know, that was a animal source because it was made of cow milk. Now I use vegan yogurts, which are amazing. And my wife makes this amazing chia pudding with that. So it's a, you know, I've made a lot of different changes since then, but I had the philosophy that protein equaled meat and you had to have that in every meal. And I have totally changed that whole philosophy. You can get all of your protein from plants. And one of the studies, in fact, when we're done here, I'm going to be making a video that I'm going to be putting on my for my my Instagram site, Cancer Veggie Doc. I just came across an unbelievable study. There was a podcast with Stu Phillips. He's one of the premier experts on protein biochemistry. And there was a study that recently came out, and it is absolutely mind-blowing. They basically took rodents, and they broke them into four different classifications, low protein, and then there was like medium protein intake, and then high protein intake. And they basically fed them like what they typically feed rodents, and the carbohydrate that they feed them is sucrose and cornmeal. And what they did is they tagged with radioactive isotopes the carbon in the carbs and the sucrose in the cornmeal. And it goes all the way down to the gut microbiome. And what they showed is the Firmicutes, which is one of your beneficial bacteria, and it's in humans too. So anytime somebody says, well, that's a rodent study, it's a Firmicutes bacteria. We have the same bacteria in our gut. They actually converted the sucrose in the cornmeal to essential amino acids, which we thought you had to ingest. And the group that ate the lowest protein actually had the highest production of these essential amino acids. And then with the radioisotope tracing, you could actually see the carbon going from the gut bacteria to the amino acid, and then from the amino acid all the way up into the muscle, and then being incorporated into the muscle through protein synthesis. And, you know, after I kind of sent that to some of my friends, and one of my really well-educated friends said, you know what, that kind of makes sense. He said, I always wondered how these apes who eat pretty much of a vegan diet get all this muscle mass. And I said, you know what, I never thought of that, but this is probably one of the mechanisms. So I really don't worry about people. If they're eating a well balanced whole food plant-based diet, I don't worry about them getting enough protein at all. They're getting probably even more protein than they actually need. But that's kind of what I ate before. I had meat in every meal, and I kind of bought into that whole idea that meat equals protein, and I don't buy into that anymore.
Okay, well, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and I want to remind our listeners that we are here today with our guest, Dr. Dominic Brandy, MD. You can just Google his name. That's Dominic with a C, or find him at any number of places. You know, after our show, we'll have an archive and we have live links to all of it, such as his website, naturalinsightsintocancer.com. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
Greetings. Join us on Sunday, June 11th, 2023, and again on Sunday, September 24th, 2023, for a Chinese herb walk and culture experience in New York City's Chinatown. Do Qigong in Chinatown's Columbus Park. Experience Chinese tongue and pulse diagnosis. Visit museums and herbal apothecaries. Learn about Chinese medicine and its theories. Spend a magical day in another country, in New York City. Your instructors are experienced healthcare practitioners and herbalists who have been leading this tour since 1992, over 30 years. For more information, call 203-263-2970. That number again, 203-263-2970. Or send us an email at drznaturally@gmail.com. That's drznaturally@gmail.com. Shay Shay.
PRN.LIVE. And today we're here talking to Dr. Dominic Brandy, medical doctor who's been in practice for over 40 years. He already shared with us that he himself is currently a patient dealing with quite a devastating illness of cancer. And he also wrote a book called Beat Back Cancer Naturally, which includes five scientifically proven natural and plant-based ways to prevent, which is much better to do in the first place, but also for survive and thrive with cancer. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Hey, it's great. Now, what a fun to be here.
Do you think that, especially with an illness such as that, that people follow just the dietary recommendations along with supplements, or do you suggest that they also allow integration of conventional?
My opinion is, and I've counseled some young people that have gotten themselves into some major problems because they just went alternative at the beginning. I have this one patient I just recently did a consult on. She's 32 years old. She got diagnosed with breast cancer, but she was 29. She did the Gerson therapy for like 10 months, which for those that don't know, you have to do like 7 coffee enemas a day, which I think are totally bogus. You have to drink 13 different juices. And the thing that's really puzzling about the Gerson therapy, I've done some reading on it. There's a lot of foods that you're not allowed to eat, like pineapples, berries, soy, which I think is like potently anti-cancer, certain mushrooms, which are very potently anti-cancer. And she just got worse and worse. And then she ended up going to another alternative practitioner in Texas, and they were doing ozone with It was mistletoe, IV, and methylene blue, and it even got worse. So then she consulted with me, and I said, hey, listen, you got to do, when you have cancer, it is a formidable and relentless disease, and you have to hit it from every single angle. You have to hit it from conventional, and then you have to do all the different lifestyle things you can do at the same time. You have to eat a whole food plant-based diet. I personally take over 30 different herbal supplements. And when I do my consults the following day, I give them a list of the supplements that I take. And then for them, specifically with their cancer, I'll triple asterisk the ones that I think are the most important, double asterisk the ones that are less important, and single asterisk the ones that are the least important for their specific situation. And all of the supplements that I recommend, they can get on Amazon. I do not hawk any supplements. I think it takes away from the credibility of the practitioner. But I'm a believer that you need to do everything. You need to do conventional. You need to do a whole food plant-based diet, or at least a plant strong diet. Supplements, exercise is so, so important. I really call that the kingpin of the lifestyle changes. And then try to get 8 hours of sleep per night. Keep your stress down. And one of the reasons I call exercise the kingpin is because when you exercise, studies show over and over again, you sleep better, you get more deep sleep, and also you have much less stress. I mean, how many people have felt stressed out? They go for a little run or something and they feel like, hey, everything's cool. So I would say exercise is important. And one of the studies I actually have in my book that is super impressive, it was on breast cancer patients. And these were people that were in remission, and it showed that women that just briskly walked 30 minutes per day for 5 days actually lowered their relapse rate by about 24%. And those that jogged a little, you know, went a little faster, 2/3 of a mile for 5 days a week, they actually lowered it by 40%. And the ones that jogged 2.3 miles per day actually lowered their chance of relapse by 95%, which is really kind of mind-blowing. I don't even think chemo drugs can do that. So exercise has an extremely powerful effect against cancer. It really has an immune-boosting effect. It makes your innate antioxidants much more efficient. It kind of increases the ability of your tumor suppressor genes to actually suppress cancer growth. One of the things I also recommend with exercise is to at least do 2 days of total body resistance training, either with bands, light weights, because as you get older, especially when you get over 50, I mean, you'll lose about 1 pound of muscle every year if you're not doing some kind of resistance training. And we do know that as your muscle deteriorates.
Oh, wait, I just want to interrupt there. And even if you do, I'm thinking of my husband who's 75 years old. He's in beautiful shape and he's never stopped doing both resistance, you know, he's brought the weights down over the years. He used to be a heavy lifter, but he still has lost some muscle, which upsets him tremendously. And he doesn't want to go to where you're doing testosterone shots and things like that. So I just tell him it's fine. You still look excellent. You just don't look like you did when you were 20 or when you were 50.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, as you get older, I'm 70 right now. And when I look in the mirror, I actually think I look pretty much the way that I did. That was 25, because I do exercise all the time, and I actually do total body resistance workout every day. So I ride my bike for about 30-45 minutes, and we have like a little outdoor gym set that we bought, which is really kind of cool. You know, I'll do my bar dips, chin-ups, pull-ups, all these different band exercises, abs. I go through the whole thing, and I'm 70. I actually have a six-pack, So I really do think if you do it on a regular basis, you can keep a lot of your muscle tone. Now, it's never going to be like when you were 20. I mean, we can still build muscle, but we don't build it at the same level as we did when we were 25, 30, 35. So, but keeping muscle mass is important, because as you lose muscle mass, you lose insulin sensitivity. You start becoming insulin resistant. And when that happens, the insulin has a hard time getting the sugar into the tissues. The sugar will elevate, and having high blood sugars are not good. I mean, I think most people know cancer really thrives on high sugar levels.
increasing. And
is powerful metabolic cancer promoter in the body. When it's at normal levels, it does everything it needs to do. It's very anabolic. But when it gets into high levels, it is a very potent cancer stimulator. In fact, when they do rodent studies, when they try to get cancers to grow faster in petri dishes, what they do is they actually add insulin to it, and they go crazy. So really developing muscle is not only, it's very, very important for insulin regulation and keeping the blood sugars down. So I do think it's extremely important. And then obviously, as you get older, you don't want to be debilitated. A lot of people die of hip fractures and so forth, just because they don't have the muscle mass. And the other thing is, when people get a disease, I just heard this on a podcast recently, and I never thought of this, but when an older person, for instance, gets COVID or something, and they're in bed for like 10 days, you know, they're going to deteriorate a lot in that period of time, and it's going to be harder for them to build that muscle back. So, you know, in that case, they're going to maybe have to up their proteins a little bit and do more resistance training to kind of retain and get that muscle mass back. I never thought of that before, but I think that's one of the reasons why, as people get older, they probably need a little bit more protein, because when they get these setbacks, I mean, it can really be hard to get that muscle tone back to where it was before the illness. So, took a little pause there. Are we still good?
Yeah, it seems like your sound is going out sometimes.
Oh, it was going out?
Okay. It's okay now.
Okay, sorry about that. I could hear it fine on my microphone, so.
No, you're there. So you were just talking about, as people age and were they to get an illness such as COVID where they're going to be bedbound for a while, that's particularly not great when you're older because you go downhill more quickly and you're losing muscle mass.
Yeah, I mean, anybody, you know, even younger people, if they get hospitalized for 10 days, I mean, if they're laying in bed for 10 days, they're going to lose a lot of muscle mass, but they're going to be able to recover that a lot quicker than somebody that's older. So I think what happens, you know, for people over 65, when they get an illness, they get hospitalized. I remember my mother-in-law, she died when she was 90, but when she would have any kind of a long-term illness, she'd come out of that hospital and she'd, like, her legs look like little toothpicks. But it's harder for older people to recover from that muscle wasting than somebody that's younger. So they're going to have to up their protein a little bit more when they come out of that situation. They're going to have to do more resistance training to try to build that muscle back up, because having frail muscles as you get older, as I think everyone knows, it really puts you at super risk of getting a hip fracture or any kind of fracture, which once you get that, I mean, I've read studies where 50% of people to get hip fractures within a year, they're dead. So it's not a good situation.
True. So those are some, and you obviously have done so much research, Dr. Brandy. How can your book be helpful? Is it for professionals only, or is your book really useful for someone who just wants to learn more?
Yeah, I've written the book for lay people. I don't really use a whole lot of like fancy terminology, and
Let me just throw out though the name of the book is "Beat Back Cancer Naturally."
Naturally,
and
right.
Of course, avoiding
and,
it.
And they can get it on
better yet.
Right. Yeah, and they get it on Amazon. I have it in it's hardback, paperback. It's also Kindle audio if people like to listen. They get it there. If they go on my website, naturalinsightsintocancer.com, I will give them a signed copy. It's about the same price as it is on Amazon. And I just get it mailed to you within like 4 to 5 days when you go onto my website. So that's another way that you can get the book.
Oh, that's really helpful. And, you know, of course, cancer in particular is one of those things that it's so much better to not get it. And there's a lot of ways to avoid it. But you're talking about, even once you have it, that these same kind of actions also could be helpful while you're fighting it.
Yes, I do cancer lifestyle counseling for a lot of patients. I've counseled hundreds of patients. And I was asked on a podcast a while back if any of my patients that were in remission came out of remission. And I honestly could not think of any. The ones that were actually following the precepts that I was teaching them, which are, as I said, the whole food plant-based diet, targeted supplements, exercise, stress reduction, getting 8 hours of sleep per night. And I teach them ways to help with their sleep and so forth, which I do think is extremely important. But I also stress ways to avoid toxins and also ways to get toxins out of your system. My wife and I personally, every night before we go to bed, we get in an infrared sauna.
Well, let's talk about toxins, because toxins are definitely an initiator of various cancers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're exposed to at least 80,000 different toxins these days. So there's ways that you can prevent it. One of the ways I always tell people to do is make sure you get a really high quality filter on your water. You would not believe what's in your tap water. So that's one of the things I think everybody should use. My wife and I use a Culligan system that really, it's a reverse osmosis. It pretty much gets everything out of that water. Even we run an air filter actually in all of our rooms too, a HEPA and a VOC filter. And there are, you know, and it's a good idea every day to open up the windows for an hour or two, because we do develop a lot of mycotoxins and different toxins just from the carpet and so forth that get in the air. So, and the construction today is so good that all of the air pretty much stays in the house. So it's a good idea to kind of, you know, vent that out and run air filters.
So that's a really interesting point, that the newer construction allows for less natural air transference.
Exactly.
So that actually can be a problem.
Exactly. 100%. So, you know, if you live in a new construction home, because even the amount of like insulation you have to put in there, I think it used to be like 4 inches, now it's like 6 inches. You know, it just really prevents any of the air quality that's poor to actually get out of the home. So it's not a bad idea every once in a while, just to, even in the winter, just open up your windows a little bit for maybe an hour just to get that air coming into your house.
That's a great idea. So we're going to take another little break here so that our listeners can hear from our home station, which is Progressive Radio Network. You can find us at prn.live. And I also invite all of you to visit us at naturalnurse.com to find books, thousands of podcasts, YouTube videos, and all kinds of information for your natural health journey. And we will be right back with more right here on prn.live.
Is there life outside the 5G AI headset? Only your own. Choose life with Progressive Radio Voices at prn.live, prn.live.
Hi, I'm Rodney Harris.
And I'm Kyle George.
And we are a host of A Different Angle. We're two young men trying to crack open the minds of today's society.
Where we'll be talking about mental health and all the struggles from all walks of life.
We'll be having special guests and some fun times as well. You can catch us every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern
on PRN.live. Hope to see you there.
We are Vaccine Information Coalition, and you're listening to Progressive Radio Network, the most listened to commercial free and truth radio program in the world. My name is Renee, and the title of our show is What in the Cell is Going On? We're on every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern, which could be accessed live on prn.live.
And that is only with Progressive Radio Voices at prn.live. Are you ready for the Great Reset? Would you like a microchip implant? Or do you want to be downloaded into a microchip? How many implants will each person get? How many downloaded people can fit into one microchip? Is your future afterlife inside of an Elon Musk microchip? Keep listening to Progressive Voices. Get continuing updates. Get real details about the Great Reset on PRN.live, the home for Progressive Radio Voices.
Thank the Natural Nurse, and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and we're so happy to be with you today. You can find us at naturalnurse.com, and we're talking with our guest, Dr. Dominic Brandy, who has been a physician for many, many years and is talking about his his own personal challenge and path working with cancer. And he wrote a book called Beat Back Cancer Naturally, which is based on his experience, but loads of science. Because Dr. Dominic, you seem like you're a little nerdy with the studies, which I actually very much appreciate. Are you back?
Yes. For a second, I couldn't hear you, so I didn't know.
Okay, what I said was that you seem to be very involved with research and keeping up with the latest research and the latest studies. And because you're an MD and you're deeply science-based, you really understand the studies and you're able to incorporate that knowledge into practical information for clients.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what happens on social media is that some of these different weird diets come out, and let's just face it, if I do a post on Instagram and I say broccoli is healthy, that's not going to get too many hits. But if somebody comes out and says everything they said about broccoli was wrong, it's going to go viral. And what's happening is people are getting very, very confused, like some of these carnivore diets and so forth. I know Paul Saladino, he was interviewed on Joe Rogan. He wrote the carnivore code, and he just eats meat, no vegetables. And he was bragging that his LDL cholesterol was 533. And you really have to look at the preponderance of evidence over many, many years. You just can't look at cherry-picked articles. And we do know that, you know, people that eat higher saturated fat diets have higher LDL levels. In the last 5 years, there have been 13 Mendelian randomization studies, you know, 28 randomized trials, 9 prospective studies. And they all show that as your LDL levels go up, your cardiovascular events like heart attacks and stroke go up. I mean, it's literally a straight line. And these people go out there and they profess these different diets, and the layperson really cannot properly analyze the study that they are quoting. For instance, a lot of times when they're talking about saturated fat isn't bad for you, for example, they'll look at groups that eat maybe 15% saturated fat compared to people that eat 20% saturated fat. And if you compare those two groups, there will not be a difference in cardiovascular events. I don't know if you've ever seen the sigmoid curve, but when you eat saturated fat from 0 up to about 8% of your total diet, the change in cardiovascular events does not change. But when you go from 8 to 15, it's a straight line up. So I always use the analogy of water. If you take water from 45 degrees Fahrenheit down to 35 degrees, it doesn't change. When you take it from 35 to 25, it turns into ice. When you take it from 25 to 15, it's still ice. And it's the same thing with saturated fat. But you can manipulate a study, and a lot of these studies are industry funded. And when an industry funds a study, it is more of a marketing budget than it is a scientific research budget. You know, they're spending all that money as a marketing tool, and they really would like that study to show that saturated fat, for example, in high quantities does not cause any cardiovascular events. And as I said before, 20 to 40% of cancer patients don't die of cancer.
Well, that was interesting information.
Well, there's many.
We lost that last comment. You were saying a certain percentage of cancer patients don't die of cancer.
Yeah, we do know that 20 to 40% of cancer patients do not die of cancer. They actually die of a cardiovascular event, like a heart attack, a stroke, an aneurysm. So it's really important to keep your cardiovascular health in tip-top shape. And that's something I always evaluate through biomarker testing that I do through my website to make sure that people have good lipid markers and so forth. But it's really a shame that people are getting really misinformed by social media, because the science is really very clear that when you eat more plant foods, for example, you have much less cancer. And I always go back to the National Cancer Institute. They recommend 9 servings of fruits and vegetables for the prevention of cancer. And the reason they do that is that all the studies show over and over again that groups that eat more plant-based have a much lower incidence of cancer. And if you look at the blue zones, I'm sure you're familiar with them. They're the 5 areas of the world where people live the longest. Dan Buettner did this study with National Geographic, and his task was to find the areas of the world where people live the longest. And he found Icaria, Greece, Sardinia, Okinawa, Costa Rica, Nicoya in Costa Rica, and then Loma Linda in California, which I always like to use because it's the same culture as the United States. They are primarily Seventh-day Adventist. They don't drink alcohol. They're either vegan or vegetarian. An average woman in Loma Linda lives about 10 years longer than their American counterpart, and men live about 14 years longer. And in all these blue zones, they have 500% more centenarians, people that make it to 100. And when people move, when descendants move to Western-type diets, countries where they eat kind of a standard American-type diet, they lose about 17 years off of their lifespan. And all of these cultures eat anywhere from 90 to 95% plant-based. So they're still eating some animal product. Some of them don't eat any animal product, but I would say most of them do, maybe 1 to 4 times per week. And when they do eat it, it's about the size of a deck of cards. It's kind of the garnish rather than, okay, here's this giant steak and we're going to throw some like green beans on the side or something. So the cultures that live the longest, they all eat a very plant-strong diet, and that gives further evidence that eating more plant-strong is definitely healthier for you, not only for longevity, but for health span, you know, the span where you live very healthy before you die.
Right, and that's what's really important, because then you're feeling well, regardless, you know, if it's 95 years or 100 years, it's more or less that you're feeling well instead of having a lot of interventions and various side effects and suffering, not that you're going to live forever. There are those people that do believe no one dies. So I don't know.
When I hear those people, man, I just turn them off completely, because we're all going to die. I mean, it's just part of the deal. And in fact, one of the things when I first got diagnosed, I read an article by Nikhil Munchki. He's a famous MD, PhD researcher in myeloma. And it really did upset me. In the study, it said, by the time you're diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which I have, you have 5,000 DNA mutations in that cancer cell. And by the time you relapse, you're up to 12,000. And some of those extra DNA mutations are most likely from the chemo treatments that people are getting, because they cause a lot of DNA mutations. But we all, every day, we get about 19,200 hits to our DNA. And thankfully, we have innate antioxidants that kind of, you can keep a lot of that under control. But we all abuse our bodies. You know, standard American diet, all these toxins we're taking in. So our innate antioxidants can easily get overloaded. And then we get all this excess free radical activity. Free radicals, for your audience that don't know, they're molecules that have an unpaired electron. They're created in the trillions by your mitochondria, and they go out and they seek another electron, because electrons do not like to be unpaired. They damage your cellular membranes, your proteins, your enzymes, DNA, and those DNA mutations do accumulate as you age. It's part of the aging process. A lot of that is repaired during sleep, and that's why sleep is extremely important, because that's when a lot of the DNA repair is going on. There's autophagy, where the body's kind of cleaning up a lot of the proteins that have been damaged, and they kind of reincorporate them into new amino acids and so forth. And there's a lot of tumor surveillance that's going on at night. So a lot of that DNA repair is going on, but still there is some that isn't. And as your proto-oncogenes, which are the genes that actually protect you from cancer, get enough DNA mutations, they actually become activated oncogenes. So instead of suppressing tumor, they actually activate tumor. So plants have 63 times the antioxidant power compared to animal products. And that's one of the main reasons I strongly recommend a whole food plant-based diet, because you want to get as many plant foods in your body as possible, because they have very potent antioxidant activity.
And they're also hopefully organic and unprocessed as much as possible.
Absolutely. But you know what I tell people? I say, listen, if you can't afford organic, just get conventional.
Right, exactly.
And wash
especially
it off
like
as much
a
as
cabbage, you know, something like
that. Yeah, right. Exactly. Like I think the foods that have like a thicker like skin, I think you can easily wash off a lot of the, you know, the pesticides on those. Things like berries, I do think people should try to get organic. In fact, I will tell your listeners one thing. We get, my wife and I, every morning we do steel cut oats. We put like a mix of chia pudding in there. She actually puts quinoa in there too. I just read an article, quinoa a cup a week can actually lower your triglycerides by 30%. But we used to just buy organic.
Wait, I have to cut you off because we're coming to where we have to sign off, Dr. Brandy.
Oh, okay.
You've shared so much information with us, and I just want to shout out that Dr. Dominic Brandy is available for individual consults, and you can find him at his website, naturalinsightsintocancer.com, or look for his book, Beat Back Cancer Naturally. And on behalf of everyone at The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamprone, as well as the folks who bring you the show at Progressive Radio Network, PRN.LIVE. Find us at naturalnurse.com. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamite, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.